welcome to the Metapod Podcast, Pokemon Podcast, which revolves around the evolving meta. It's a beautiful, beautiful, oh, it better be a beautiful morning as we're up at the crack of dawn. Glad to have you here. Hopefully you're enjoying your day. But Sean, how are you doing?
I'm good, Jake. It's not quite the crack of dawn for me, but for you,
I'm shocked at how bright it is outside at like 6 a.m. I never realized this, mostly because I just...
Because you're asleep?
Yeah, I sleep until like 8. So like, this is a whole new experience, seeing the whole new world.
No, but I'm good. Repping the Snorlax mug again. I'm going to point that out every time, Jake.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's now my morning podcast mug for when we have to record super early. Just because of scheduling stuff. I got work. I got a game later today, so we're doing it in the morning. But that doesn't matter to you because you're listening to this whenever you want. But Sean, did you happen to catch any of Orlando regionals this weekend?
I watched the first round from day one, which was Dialga versus...
I think
like an electric lost box.
Yeah, it was really cool.
And I think Dialga won, right? And That person is somebody that I have met, is a local. He's in the Queens neighborhood. He was shouting out Card Quest and Gaming Universe, which are like the Queens locals. So I was like, yeah, I know that person, sort of. Mm-hmm. Not super well, but I know
you're acquaintance. You're aware of them.
Yeah. So I watched that, and then this morning I tuned into the finals round. I just wanted to soak in. More Charizard, basically.
More Charizard. That's exactly what this weekend was, and we'll get to it more. I was watching it pretty much the entire time because I actually got to work from home over the weekend. Nice. So I just had the stream up as it was going. And I would say, well, I had it on pretty much the whole time, but whether I was focusing, watching, and is a little bit different because I was working throughout the day. But I did see a lot more than usual. So I'm excited to talk about the results that came out today through Perth, through the Philippines, through Orlando. There's some interesting stuff that we can kind of start to talk about. A craze, if you will, in my opinion. But Sean, first. Over the weekend in Orlando, the casters, I think specifically Chip Ritchie, and this is not a dig or anything at Chip Ritchie. I just thought that this was a very intriguing point to talk about. He talked about how he thought that Radiant Greninja is officially the greatest card of all time.
Interesting.
And I want to know how you feel about that.
That's definitely a bold statement. We've had some pretty amazing cards in the past. I understand his perspective that Radiant Greninja kind of goes, it's like a staple, right? It goes in almost every deck as an every turn consistency card. If you think about the amount of draw over the course of a game that Radiant Greninja gets you for discarding energy, which also discarding energy is something a lot of decks also want to do. Over the course of a game, if you get it down turn one or two, I would guess that draws you maybe 10 cards, 12 cards in some decks.
And I was going to say, because he named it better than Zoroark. We talked about how Zoroark is such a great card, or was. Yep. On this podcast, he talked that it's more influential than even Neocleffa, right? Mm-hmm. One of the cards that they reprinted in Celebrations. So I was just I heard it and I was like, whoa, 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 whoa.
Yeah.
But the more that I thought about it, I was like, he's at least right there. If he's not correct, he's at least right there. Because I don't know if I'm ready for Radiant Greninja to get it yet, but maybe I should be with, having such an influential mark, especially in Lost Box, right? Mm-hmm. Lost Box and Chin Pao decks, it's a good attacker, right? Yeah. Which is something that we hold Zoroark to, being able to both attack and be support. So Maybe, I don't know. I would love to hear a super in-depth prepared discussion, not something that I just promptly threw on you.
I would say, if I had to compare it, like, I'll say this. I don't think you or I necessarily know the full range of Pokemon's history in terms of standard legal, like, staple cards. We know some.
I go to like 2016.
Right. I mean, I would look back, though, and I would say that probably Shaymin EX, very influential card, you know? Especially because you could play more than one of it in a turn back in the day. And that's huge, right? It may also be that the execute that you can put back in your hand, like that also.
Propagation,
execute. Now, propagation, execute does not necessarily draw you cards, but it effectively acts as a, whenever something needs you to discard two, it's only a discard one. So in that respect, it is a plus one in hand every time.
It's like literally any time. Like, once you see and draw the card, you will always have the card.
Yep.
So, no matter what.
So those are the other two that I have knowledge of that I would say maybe they're in the running, but to your point, neither Shaymin or Execute is like a viable attacker.
Yeah. So they have like one specific, those two cards have like one specific motive or like game plan in terms of use. Sure, you can use this, what is it, Sky Return on Shaymin, the attack that does 30 damage for two energies and comes back to your hand, which was used in the double colorless meta, but it was really only to just like get it off the field, never really for the damage part.
Yeah. So like, you know,
my understanding,
I would say net, I can understand the argument, right? It's definitely a top five, top three card of all time in terms of pure utility, right? Like it is crazy. You think about it and you know, you're like, oh, draw two cards, discard an energy. In isolation, that one effect is kind of whatever, right? But when you think about the effect over the course of a game, it really adds up to be like no other card draws you that much in the course of a game. And now that we don't have Path to the Peak in play, maybe it's one of those things where like you just see how broken the card is because like nothing stops it, basically.
And then also talking about it, you know, it's easy off of, you know, we've had Nestball in the format.
Yeah.
We had Battle VIP Pass for a while. I wonder how influential Battle VIP Pass is to cards like Radiant Greninja and like Rotom and stuff like that. Well, Rotom wasn't super popular before Rotation Charizard, I guess. True. So, I guess we'll never know. But
it's a good discussion.
There is stuff.
Cool.
Yeah, it's an interesting conversation that I'd love to hear, but there is stuff that we do know, and by do know, I mean we're slowly getting more and more information on this set 6.5 listed and revealed hopefully soon. The next set after Twilight Masquerade. It's got a name right now. Scarlet and Violet 6.5. What an exciting, exciting name. Just a placeholder name. Before its release date of August 2nd, and then Scarlet Violet 7 being on potentially September 13th. The set, Twilight Masquerade, has a new product as well that mentions a Illustration Rare Collection product that comes out on August 2nd. So, and just disclaimer, we're talking about like English, rest of the world, not Japan. Right here with this, because if for anyone who's curious, maybe just listening in, so there's a couple listed products for this as usual: mini tins, elite trainer box, three pack blisters, EX special collection, booster bundle. I love that they keep doing the booster bundles. I think they're really, really cool, even though I don't buy them. I think they're just a really good option. And then the Illustration Rare Collection. This is the holiday set, right? No.
I mean,
this is
maybe
a main set.
No. This is a specialty set. No, it's a specialty set.
It's a specialty.
Yeah, it says it. It's a special set. So it won't
all sets are special to me, Sean.
I mean, it won't be a full like 200 plus card set. It'll probably be something closer to our, you know, we don't really know honestly what, you know, encompasses this set. Is it going to be a shiny style set like Paldean Fates and Hidden Fates and all that stuff? Or is it going to be more like a Pokemon Go celebrations type vibe where you get some illustrations? And either way, the one thing that is important to note about this is now that we have this information, Jake, we know that there will be no new main sets between Twilight Masquerade, which releases in, I want to say, June. And I'm pretty sure that one will release in time for it to be standard legal for NAIC, maybe end of May. I could be wrong, but
Twilight Masquerade is announced to release on May 24th.
There you go. So 2 weeks before NAIC. And then we won't have another main set before Worlds, because the next main set is September 13th, but this specialty set will be legal for Worlds if it releases on August 2nd. That'll be two weeks. So, you know,
because we have Worlds dates now. Yeah,
we do. Hey, there we go. Everything is falling into place. But what's interesting about that is, you know, we don't really think of these specialty sets as being like that impactful to a meta, and they're not usually on like on a big scale. But there's always like one or two cards, right? Think about Pokestop, right? Pokestop is from Pokemon Go. I mean, Charizard, right? Radiant Charizard, I think, is from the Pokemon Go set. So we had the Zacian that that Gardevoir used to use, right? That was from Celebration. So these specialty sets usually have like three or four cards that are like that actually do make a difference. So
another throwback from a specialty set, Dragon Majesty, Fiery Flint.
Oh my gosh, that card was so good. Fiery Flint.
That card was awesome. I love that card. I miss that card. but anyways, we're here always with you all. Hot take, I hope it's not a shiny set.
I don't know if it will. Part of me doubts it will be because Paldean Fates was not that long ago, right?
Yeah, but I mean, they've pumped out three shiny sets since Hidden Fates. Hidden Fates, Shiny Star V. Shiny Star V. What was
the
V
Japanese one? But I don't remember off the top of my head. There was like Hidden Fates, Paldean Fates, Crown Zenith. And then there's
Did
one
Crown
other.
Zenith have shinies?
Champion's Path.
No, Champion's Path didn't. No. It's like a. Was it V Star Universe?
Well, was that's it... the Japanese names.
They had another one.
I mean, you're almost
because they
there,
had
right?
they had Shining. I think it was Shining Fates. Because remember,
yes,
didn't
right.
they combine?
Shining Fates. You're right.
Well, it's no, because it's they combined Hidden Fates and the name of the other one to make Paldean Fates.
Shining Legends.
Do you remember that? Shining. No, well, that's before Hidden Fates.
Anyway,
I'm gonna go crazy.
Point being, you're right. We have had a few. I don't know. I think this one may be closer to the Crown Zenith because you're right. Crown Zenith wasn't really a shiny set as much as it was a specialty set. So my guess is because we have a collection called Special Illustration Rare, like Illustration Rare Collection, it's probably going to fall more into the Crown Zenith style set than a shiny style set. I think you're correct about that.
I just I'm kind of tired of the formula they've been going with in terms of the shiny Pokemon. Like, we've done it. We've just kept dunning it, you know?
I will say, Jake, shout out to Pokemon, though, for releasing this 2 weeks before Worlds so that if you want to bling out your deck with these new illustration rares that are coming out, they'll be legal. You know, you won't have anybody being like, oh, well, technically these cards are not legal because it hasn't been out for 2 weeks, even though it's the same card. No. Pokemon is like, we will not make that mistake again.
Will Post gives his thanks. I see him on Twitter all the time, you know, answering questions, especially like judge questions. And one of his big jokes is that right before events is that no, Hidden Fates is not legal for this championship.
Yeah. Like, that's so funny. Yeah, Hidden Fates was released and everybody wanted to play the shiny cards and it was all like, stop, you can't.
Yeah, I mean, I don't blame them because, I mean, when they first released, they were awesome. But you know what's also awesome, Sean? This, well, I guess depending on what deck you like playing, you may think this is awesome or not. This slew of decks that have come out. And by slew of decks, I mean one deck played by many individuals. There is one deck that has taken over the Temporal Forces meta and has taken Storm towards 60, has been so popular and so good that Charizard Pidgeot has just dominated, essentially, in the event. Sean, I will also mention, we're going to talk a lot about the three tournaments that I mentioned earlier, Orlando, Perth, and the Philippines. The Philippines is Charizard City. Perth, Charizard City. Orlando, not necessarily Charizard City, but it also won. So a lot of good stuff going on in here. Sean, which one do you want to talk about first?
I mean, let's start with Orlando. Just, you know, it's the one that I think most of our listeners are going to be more familiar with. But yeah, starting there, you know, the number one spot, as Jake alluded to, Liam Halliburton winning with Charizard Pidgeot. But I would pull up Liam's deck, but his deck is not on Limitless. However, he basically has Tords list from EUIC with one change. So
he did tweet on like the 9th or whatever, like a couple days before the event. He said, if you're a smart player, just net deck towards 60 for Orlando and whatnot. And that's literally exactly what he did, except changed one or two cards. So, Sean, we know at least one of the cards off the top of our head. Which one is it?
He's got a second Charmeleon. And in terms of what he took out, we are suspecting that it might be the Jirachi, right? That's what we think it might be.
Yeah, I remember the casters talking about how Liam didn't have the Jirachi in there. And then did he play Airy? Do you remember?
I don't remember seeing it. He might.
I know one thing that was insanely popular over the weekend was Airy in Charizard, a one of Airy. So if I had to make another suspicion, or maybe you're trying to get the all around kind of what everybody played in this weekend, probably took out the Team Yells Cheer for the Airy, if I had to take a guess. Those are kind of the two that I would guesstimate. But not saying that they're totally correct because, well, like Sean said, we don't have his full list yet.
Yeah, and I think those changes, I can understand them, right? Because Team Yells Cheer, I'll say this, it is really, it's a versatile card. We talked about it last week, but it's mostly there for control. They're going to want to stick things in the active that don't have energy. You only have 6 energy in the deck. And really, your only switching outs are Prime Catcher and Professor Turo scenario. So Team Yells Cheer can put the Turos back into your deck, but it's versatile enough that it can also weave back in Pokemon, right? But if you don't expect to hit a lot of control, because it's not that popular, and it's not like it's won several tournaments or anything, so, you know, you just take the risk. And then Jirachi, that's one that I can understand, but Giratina Lawzone is still a good deck. Maybe the thought process there is for Giratina against Charizard, their game plan is not Sableye Devolution. Instead, their game plan is Giratina into a Charizard, Giratina into a Pidgeot, and then Iron Leaves into a Charizard, right? Like, that's the three knockouts they want to go for. So maybe there's like, I don't know what matchup I would need Jirachi for, because the one that mostly plays Sableye, that's not their path to victory. So
I would be interested to hear a lot more about Liam's thoughts in like a real in-depth interview, because the casters, when they were talking about, I think, his top four match, maybe, or whatever, I think he matched up in the top eight against, or maybe in the final rounds, to guarantee a loss box. I'm not sure, but they mentioned how Liam, yeah, he took out the Jirachi, but he added in that Charmeleon, and that Charmeleon was like a pseudo Jirachi against the Sableye, just in essentially saying like the boost of HP, right, the 30 HP or whatever that it gets boosted, is enough to almost counter out the Sableye. So maybe like Jirachi in a deck like this, especially if you're playing, you know, these cards, maybe aren't necessarily as influential as we think are necessary, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I also like the second Charmeleon from the perspective of, like, Sableye is a great card. Don't get us wrong. Mm-hmm. Like, Jirachi, if Sableye is everywhere, you need to play Jirachi. But Charmeleon is useful because any deck can play the Devolution Incense, right? Or the Devolution TM. And that can debilitate a Charizard deck. So say your opponent does it on a specific turn, and you don't have a rare candy, you might miss a turn. Or, and this is a crazy thought, there's so much Charizard in the format, Jake, that I wouldn't be surprised if some decks start running two Devolution TMs just as a pure Charizard counter, right? And look, you will hit back Excalibur as a as collateral.
Yeah.
And you'll hit back Excalibur, and you'll also... you probably won't hit Gardevoir all that much, but Backscalibur is the other one.
I will say, I think the Charmeleon's really there too, just for consistency, right? Mm-hmm. In terms of evolving Pokemon every single turn, you go from a two-card combo of Rare Candy Charizard to a one-card, right? At least for that turn. So there's just more opportunities to be able to continuously advance your board state. And then also with the addition of Airy in the format, I'm just going to keep talking about Airy. I feel like I mentioned Airy earlier, and I'm just going to mention it again because I think it's actually a really interesting card that we're going to continuously see a lot more of in way more than just control decks. I think we start seeing it in a lot of regular decks already. You know, if somebody Airies your rare candy, right, that's theoretically one less Charizard for every Charmeleon that you don't have in your deck. Yeah. So it's almost like an Airy counter as well. Like, okay, you got one rare candy. Congrats. Good job. Okay. But I have a little guy as well to be able guy. To I have a little guy to just continuously evolve. So I think the list is really, really cool. And we'll talk a little bit more about it later because it's not the last we'll see of it.
Yeah. I mean, I guess we can finish off with Orlando, like go through the other stuff. Second place was Jake Ewert, maybe. I'm terrible with last names, but I think it's Jake Ewert. Playing Ancient Box, the single prize version. The one that prioritizes Roaring Moon as the, you know, maybe the typical main attacker. And then you've got, you know, in certain scenarios, maybe you Koridon, or maybe you Great Tusk in certain matchups. But Jake, what do you think about this list?
I really like this list. I think it's very, very cool. I mean, you talk about what United Wings wanted to be.
Yeah.
You know, as good as this, but the flexibility of this just being ancient cards in general is really, really strong, or makes it really, really strong, because quick math, you're playing 12 plus 8, that's 20, 21, 25, 29 different ancient cards that you can have in your deck, at least as of now. Who knows if we'll get more in the future, but it ended up working out really, really well, because especially with the 70 plus, what is it to knock out one hit KO a Charizard? It would be 26.
Yeah.
Yeah. You would need 26 in your discard pile without the without any damage modifications, which I don't think there is any in this deck, the future capsule does, the ancient one gives more HP, but then puts you at 200 HP, which is not really a number to scoff at all, in my opinion. You've got the Fluttermane as well in there, and we saw in the stream in, I think it was the top four round, how strong that Fluttermane can be, turning off with Midnight Fluttering the abilities of Comp Phase and things like that, to be able to basically just stop Lost Box. And that's really what I remember, like a matchup that this player had against Lost Zone Giratina in the top eight, and one of the games at least was pretty much decided by Fluttermane.
Just it sits in the active, and then if your opponent can't get around it, you're just kind of like, well, I guess I have to wait until I just draw Colorus in order to do anything, especially
because the format now doesn't have escape rope, right? Yep. There's limited switching options that one can utilize that aren't like boss, counter catcher, or prime catcher, right? Are you going to use your prime catcher, right, just to get a Fluttermane out of the active, or are you going to use your boss for turn and not Colress? So it's a really, really, it worked out really, really nicely for a lot of stuff, because Giratina was a popular deck over the weekend in Orlando. And then all the other stuff, yeah, you're just trying to discard your dudes in there, and you're trying to get your energies on board. You are playing a one of fire energy. For potentially a shred attack through the Coridons that you play, because it does cost one fire, one fighting, and then a colorless. So interesting to have that option there through your super energy retrieval and earthen vessels overall.
Yeah, I wonder if, is it Noivern that says your opponent's basic Pokemon?
Yes.
Attack? Yeah. So I wonder if that is sort of like a, just in case I hit a Noivern, I need to be able to shred through it.
I'd have to look. Well, I guess, like, I don't know how this interaction works in all truth, but I think Noivern's attack says they can't attack. You can't even attack. So can you announce Shred? But Shred says it's not affected by any effects on your opponent's active Pokemon.
It's this attack's damage.
This attack's damage. So this is saying that you still can. So I'd have to get a ruling on that, whether or not it can. Justin is furiously typing in the comments below about how do you not know this? You
know, I don't know. There may be some other reason that Shred is good. Maybe there's I don't know. Maybe it has to do
I think just the number 130.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
The number 130 can just get you out of certain situations, right? We talk about Radiant Greninja, how great that card is. That card's at 130. Right. Yeah. Just being able to potentially counter catcher and then bust it up with a shred, right, is pretty easy overall. Right. And then you can save your Roaring Moons to be able to take out damage, because Coridon only does 30 times for each of the ancient Pokemon in play. So there might be times where you don't really have any in place. So the shred is your best option for dealing the most damage, and could just be really good setup for some of the bigger Pokemon at the earlier stages of the game.
So looking,
it's definitely the most budget friendly list right now, by the way.
Looking at some of the other stuff, we do have a Gardevoir cracking the top eight in Florida. Let's take a look at that and sort of see. I don't think we looked at a post-rotation Gardevoir yet? I don't think so.
No, it got ninth last weekend. But my prediction of it making the top eight at least once ended up working out. And Sean, I will say, this Gardevoir has one of your favorite cards in it that we're looking at right now. Do you know what card I'm talking about?
Is it Klefki? Heroescape?
Maybe it's not one of your favorite cards. I was talking about Drifloon.
Oh, yeah, I do like Drifloon. Drifloon's
great. You talk about Drifloon all the time when we talk about Gardevoir, and now it's finally in Gardevoir.
I do be talking about Drifloon. You're right. yeah, this is cool. Yeah, I mean, like, It's what I expected the deck to be in some respects. Like I built a version, and I think there's a combination of I don't have the exact 60 right, and also piloting it can be really tough. But like, yeah, Drifloon and Screamtail are your main attackers, but then you have things like Klefki, Mimikyu, and Fluttermane to be really disruptive to your opponents, whether that's in the early game or, you know, you could get into a scenario where against certain decks, like if you are, I was going to say Turbo Hands, but Turbo Hands has Maridon that can get through Mimikyu. So, but I'm sure there are scenarios, right? Maybe your opponent is playing an evolution deck and gets a little out of hand with their Charizard, and Pidgeot evolves everything up. And then you just put the Mimikyu out there and you're like, what are you going to do, hit me with Bidoof? No.
Point being, your opponent has to completely pivot their game plan to adjust to yours. So that alone can just be enough to throw off your opponent and take a lead in there. It is playing the TM evolution. I thought this was a really, really cool inclusion. I saw it in one of the rounds that they streamed this player in there, and just evolving into two refinements because you don't have Mirage Step anymore in format. It's just so, so cool. Taking a little bit off of the Charizard game plan, plays Professor Turo's scenario in there. Again, just really good. You know, you can pick up your Gardevoir. You can pick up literally any Pokemon that you don't want, or maybe want to relieve the damage on the field. And then Airy, this deck also playing the Airy. So again, talking about how this card is just going to make its way into a lot of regular decks, and this is just one of them.
Yeah. I'll be interested to see. I think that, I don't know how many decks are continuing to play Manaphy. I mean, obviously this deck and Charizard did, but I think there's a decent number of decks in the format right now that maybe don't prioritize Manaphy. And doing that against Gardevoir is a huge mistake because Screamtail is crazy good at taking out, you know, anything on the bench. Mm-hmm. I think that this deck, the biggest weakness this deck has, and the thing that I harp, and I'll keep saying it every week, Lost Vacuum is a very good card in this format. So I think this deck has a very hard time against a deck that has two Lost Vacuums, let's say. I know that probably sounds insane, two Lost Vacuums, but I'll stand by that because in a lot of matchups, like if you're playing against the single prize Ancient Box deck, two Lost Vacuums are two of the Ancient Booster Capsules that don't hit the discard too, which is 20 less damage that they can get to reach for whatever number they need to hit. So, but in this deck, especially Lost Vacuum, just like it does against Turbo Hands, they'll get a free knockout on one of your little things that the Bravery Charm, Luxurious Cape, or Hero's Cape is on, and then they can take another knockout. So you can negate a bit of that single prizer feel if you play Lost Vacuum. So that's the only thing I'll say. You know, I want to play this deck, so I don't want to give people too many ideas of how to counter it. But Lost Vacuum is so good right now. I'm just going to reiterate.
This is a safe space, Sean. We definitely won't use these cards against you in you know, locals and whatnot. But really, really cool to see Gardevoir up there, even though I'm kind of surprised that Gardevoir went up there. But the inclusion of Manaphy, I think, is really nice. And I think Manaphy's really just only there now if you have little baby bench Pokemon that are influential for support. Right, because you're talking about something like Iron Hands. I don't think Iron Hands plays the Manaphy, and that's because all their dudes are like 220, 210 HP, all those Cobalion or whatever Pokemon they're called, Iron something. Anyways,
Iron
Crown.
There we go. But
I'm getting old.
The last deck I want to talk about for this tournament specifically, because I think we didn't. I don't think Chen Pao made a splash, made a splash at EUIC, despite being a really good deck. And it's Chen Pao, right? So I think that, you know, Jared had some success with it at EUIC, and Reagan Retzloff getting fourth with Chen Pao at Orlando. I would say, generally speaking, it's exactly what you expect from Chen Pao. The biggest difference in this format are a couple of cards here. I think Prime Catcher does just feel like the right A-spec for this deck because you want to take big knockouts faster than your opponent. Interestingly, he's opting for one copy of, out of their three Frigibacks, one copy of the 70 HP Frigibacks because it has a single energy attack for collect to draw a card. So situationally, that might be the thing that if you're going second and you have to leave something in the active, maybe that's the Frigibacks you leave in the active to just draw one extra card. And then the only other thing that's like a big change for this, and we may have talked about this, is Cypher Maniac's code breaking. So, Jake, do you want to explain to people why Cypher Maniac code breaking in this type of deck is just so good?
Cypher Maniac's code breaking, in my opinion, is a really cool card inclusion for, and this is for any archetype that you're doing this. If you're playing Bibberell, or even potentially Radiant Greninja, in all honestly, think about Cypher Maniac's code breaking. This is essentially a reprinted card effect that we've seen do really well in the past, and it can do really well in the future, especially if you get to draw cards, because you get to literally put whatever you want on the top of the deck. And especially in a deck like this, where you have a two card combo with the Rare Candy and Bax Caliber, it's a perfect combination as almost like a pseudo Irida in a sense, right? If you've got a Bibberell established, you can use Cypher Maniac's code breaking to put the Rare Candy, to put the Bax Caliber on top and evolve straight into it. Or even not even that, like I mentioned, you know, if you have other support things, like maybe you want to get a Buddy Buddy Puffin, or maybe you want to get a, you know, a Prime Catcher to gust up a Pokemon to KO, you can use Cypher Maniac code breaking to set up Radiant Greninja draw, right? Because Radiant Greninja will draw you those two cards. So it's really, really strong in a deck that has a lot of ways to draw two or more cards. So I really, really like Cypher Maniac's code breaking. I think it's a really cool card.
Yeah, I would recommend if you're playing against Chen Pao. I know this sounds weird, but I think Chen Pao and Lugia share a similar strategy in how to actually beat them consistently. And I think it's like for Lugia, it's taking out the Archeops if you can early. And then for this deck, it's like a combination. It depends on what your opponent's board state is like, but I have seen success. A, if you can take out their only Baxcalibur and they don't have another Frigibax, obviously do that, right? Do that. They can't do anything without Baxcalibur. But assuming they have like two Baxcalibers up and that's not really much of an option, going after Bibberell or Radiant Greninja is another great way to potentially, you know, turn off their engine. Because to your point, between Cypher Maniac's code breaking, finding whatever cards you want, Bibberell drawing, they're going to empty their hands, the player, almost every turn on their turn, or nearly empty it with by getting rid of all that energy. And so the only way that they can get big attacks off consistently is to refill their hands with the exact resources they need, which are like superior energy retrievals. So just a note there, how important Bibberell is in this deck. So I also want to point out briefly, Silene in this deck. It's interesting. It's like kind of like a coin flip Cypher Maniac, but for the discard.
I think Cyber or Silene makes sense because you think about the deck and sometimes its shortcomings, right? Especially with these big Charizards in the format. Silene is the only way to get back like a superior energy retrieval or like a super rod or something like that. So being able to put these kind of influential items and really just cards in general, you know, another attacker or something like that, or maybe you're one of canceling. Yeah, Prime Catcher, put that back in there. Canceling Cologne, right? Yeah, a one of item card. So Silene makes sense, especially as a one of, and if not, it's just, well, discard fodder for your stuff.
I also wonder, is there a Palpat in this deck? No.
Okay. No, there is no Palpat.
I was trying to think,
allows you to grab back Cypher Maniac's code breaking if you want.
Yeah, I was trying to think of like, if is there like a loop where if you flip enough heads, oh. you can like never deck out. And I'm like, no, that's not in this deck. Never mind.
No, there's no infinite loop in this, but does Iron Bundle? So Iron Bundle is
no,
in
it goes to the
this.
Discard.
Oh no, yeah, it goes to the discard. Yeah. Okay, never mind. It's not like Pyukumuku, exactly. Where it goes back into the deck or whatever. But anyways, there is also an Iron Bundle, spoiler alert, in here, that pseudo escape rope kind of sense Pokemon that we talked a lot about in the beginning, but we haven't really seen almost anybody play, except for I think maybe like a Lost Box deck out for one weekend. We saw it played through one group, but back again in Shin Pao, and we'll see if it sticks.
Yeah, I mean, hey, Iron Bundle too, I wouldn't rule it out. I don't know what the matchups are. Maybe it's literally just there to move something out of the active, which, fair enough.
Yeah, I think it's just disrupting.
But I wouldn't ignore the attack on it. You know, if the defending Pokemon is an evolution, it can't attack. Again, if fewer and fewer decks are playing switching cards, which we're seeing, like, look at all the decks that we've gone through. How many literal switches or switch cards or whatever have we seen in those decks? The answer is zero. Mm-hmm. So the only switching outs in most of those decks right now are Prime Catcher or Professor Turo. So you could catch your opponent lacking, so to speak, and sort of sneakily trap them where it's just like, well, you know, if you're Charizard and you're only out, since you've maybe played your Prime Catcher, you're only out of your active is either retreating and losing that energy, or Professor Turoing it away, which is you've devolutioned yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. This is a small world. Probably not great, but I just wanted to point that out.
It's a cheeky inclusion in the deck that I think we can enjoy. But Sean, is there anything else before you want to move into the next place?
Well, I mean, I don't know. Do we want to talk about the Dunsparce Roaring Moon real quick?
The Dunsparce Roaring Moon is essentially a Roaring Moon like what the Ancient Box deck played, except for a couple inclusions of Roaring Moon and then, well, as we mentioned, the Dunsparce. So using the Roaring Moons, either the EX to knock out like literally anything on the field, right? If you can't hit your big numbers. And then the baby Roaring Moon to consistently do damage. Now, this one is a little bit different in the sense that, you know, you're not playing the Koridons, you're not playing the Fluttermanes in there. So inherently, maybe you're using the Roaring Moon EX more than you would think, even though there's only two copies in there, because there's what, 6, 14,
24.
20, or 18. 24?
I believe there's 24 because there's you got 6 plus 8, 14 plus 4 in the earth and vessels, 18, 20, maybe 22.
Yeah. 22, quick math. So 7 less than the regular Ancient Box, but still pretty good making the top 8 because of the Dunsparce with that runaway draw ability, with that flexibility of being able to be used anytime that you want to draw 3 cards and then shuffle that Pokemon and all cards attached into the deck. So really, really cool in my opinion that you play this. Has a 1 of Temple of Sinnoh for the, I would assume, Lugia, which can we talk about how wrong I was about Lugia? Because I think about it every day.
I don't know. I think, look, I'm getting stomped by Lugia every week at my locals right now, and I do understand it. It's a good deck. I don't know why it's not making top 8s. Maybe it's just a consistency issue of like, you know, if the Archaeops is such a big part of the engine and you have just enough games where you either don't have a good enough start or whatever, I could see that struggling in like a large enough tournament. But I think at locals, don't be afraid to play Lugia at locals. It's just a great deck. If you run hot, you're going to have a great time.
I think a lot of the problem with Lugia, and I think we saw it on stream, you know, there was just a point where the player was just flipping the, what's the card that it's like heads for...
Capturing Aroma?
Heads, Yeah, capturing aroma, just flipping, capturing aromas, and was looking for heads, but just kept getting tails. And it basically just like stopped their entire game plan because they couldn't find that one card off of the coin flip. So I think that's kind of the problem with Lugia, is that it's not as consistent. There's like almost a false consistency with it, because your consistency comes with hitting coin flips, which a lot of people will tell you is not always. It's not really a game plan that you should always try to 100% do. So it's really interesting to see Lugia just like not, it's not relevant really in this format, except for like a couple spots, which I think is cool.
Jake, let's move on to, you know, to wrap this podcast up, Perth and then Philippines, mm-hmm. just to give people a flavor, like, you know, hey, in the US at least, you know, there's a couple of Charizards that made top eight. We had Liam, and we also had Luke, so Celio's network, making fifth. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you think, just obviously, Charizard is good. Obviously, people like playing it. 22% of day one meta, I think, this tournament. But, you know, how bad could it be? I'm clicking over to Perth right now, Jake, to start with.
Yep.
Can you do the basic? How many Charizards are in that top eight?
There are five Charizards in the top eight, and I believe four of those Charizards are in the same testing group that came into this tournament. So are playing the same deck: Rahul Reddy, Brent Tonneson, Kaiwen Kababe, and I believe Jordan Palmer was in that group. I could be wrong, but at least in their testing group, I know that there are four of them in top eight. They had 100 out of like the five people, all of them converted into day two of this event. And then I believe four of them were in the top eight, I believe is the story that I heard from Rahul's social media. So that's why Charizard is so prevalent in here. And my gosh, what a pick it was. But so, Sean, we can really just show like Kaiwen's list, and that's pretty much the top eight, right?
Yeah, basically.
Or I'm sorry, I think Max Prescott was in the testing group. Maybe not. Okay. No, I'm pretty sure Brent was. Anyways, there was a lot of the same Charizard in the room, and it did really, really well. So what does that look like?
I mean, it looks a lot like Tord's list in some ways, but it has a few key differences, right? Which it looks like Tord's list in that it has Pidgeot and Bibarel, that it plays Prime Catcher as the A spec rather than Maximum Belt or Hero's Cape. But where it differs is it plays a one of Regieleki, which is really interesting. It does not play any lightning energy, so ignore the second attack. But the first attack, put a trainer from your discard pile into your hand. I think this is, you know, an excellent, either an eerie counter or an excellent devolution TM counter. So if you just, for whatever reason, I think it's really to get those rare candies back. You have to take a turn off to get them back, but it's a single prizer taking that turn for you, you know, and that might make the difference between you winning and losing the game. Outside of that, though, this list does opt for the Eerie itself. Mm-hmm. So having its own
instead
sort
of the team
of,
yells cheer.
Exactly. Having its own sort of disruption. And the last thing that's really particularly different is the TM devolution in this list. So I think we saw at EUIC and prior a lot of Charizards playing their own TM devolution for the mirror match in particular.
Just really anything that's evolving right now in the format.
Yep. So, you know, it's interesting. Like, you know, if it's evolving, say you've got a... say you've done a little bit of damage into even a V-Star, but not enough to knock it out. Take a turn, do TM Devolution, you finish up. And that can be done on a Pokemon you don't care about in the active, right? Maybe you leave the Manaphy to do a TM Devolution and leave your opponent with a single prizer while you've taken two prizes. So, options.
You can even use it on something like the Cleffa. Right, that you could use at the beginning of the game, because remember, TM Devolution gives an extra attack, the attack that's on the TM itself. And that one specifically, you only need one energy, so you just attach a basic energy to that Cleffa. I love Cleffa. I want to keep seeing Cleffa. I think Cleffa is such a cool card.
Yeah.
Being able to draw on there. But yeah, I mean, that's a majority of the top eight in Perth. Do you want to talk about any of the other decks? I think there's like maybe one other deck that we could talk about.
No. I really wanted to highlight Perth just for like mm-hmm. the how many Charizards, and then we can flip over to Philippines, top 16. Mm-hmm. And Jake, how many Charizards are in the top eight of this tournament?
I will say, in terms of Charizard Pidgeot, and we haven't gone through each one to see exactly what that Charizard Pidgeot list looks like, but there is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 different Charizard Pidgeots in the top 16, along with 3 other Charizards that are just labeled as Charizard without Yeah, they're leaning. I'm looking through them now. They're pretty much just leaning more towards the Bibarel as the draw engine and playing other attackers such as like Entei, yeah. right, for some extra synergy and whatnot.
I'm looking at the first place list now, and I will say this: play whatever version of Charizard, like whatever tweaks. I think between all of the lists now, you can go look at them on Limitless. Figure out what the base is and figure out the 5 cards that you want to build your deck differently. Like, you know, what are the differences? But it's interesting. There was a card I was playing around with in Charizard. I don't know if it's actually necessary, but Gouging Fire EX. I think if you are playing the Maximum Belt, or, you know, if your meta has more V-Star Pokemon, maybe, I think Gouging Fire EX is an interesting include because its second attack, it does cost 3 energy, so it's very expensive. But the second attack does 260 damage. Now, it can't use this attack again until it leaves the active, but, you know, it's...
Nah.
You'll deal with that.
It's probably being knocked out.
Yeah. But the 260 is interesting because you also are playing things like Choice Belt. So again, if you're playing against V-Stars and you want to take out those V-Stars quickly before they've taken like 3 or 4 prizes, that Choice Belt is going to get you to 290. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, maybe that level of aggression makes the difference in the people you're playing against. So I just wanted to point that out, that this deck feels like a more... do more damage aggression build. So, you know, I don't know if the rest of them also follow that same logic, but
I will tell you that the second place list does not play the Gouging Fire. Also does not play the Bibarels in there as well. And so just scrolling down, it's kind of like a 50-50 almost about whether they do or not. I see it in some, I don't see it in others, you know, I see it in some. So it's really, again, like you're saying, you know, when you decide what you want to do with Charizard, like you want to play Charizard EX, then you kind of have like a 3 to 5 card difference of like, okay, this is my base, this is what I want to do. And so fitting towards my play style or maybe the meta overall, what do I change with this? What are these kind of inclusions that'll help me in certain matchups that maybe I struggle with, or maybe that I expect to see a ton of in this? Shout out to the 2 Dialgas that got 15th and 16th, though. Love those. Love those. Love those. Yep.
I pulled them up for anybody that's listening to the pod, wants to swing over to the YouTube or is on the YouTube. You know, you can go screenshot this list if, you know, you are a Dialga stan and you just want to see what a good list. Yeah, if you just want to see, because I think we've talked about lists, but we maybe haven't, like, I don't know if we've looked at a list. But yeah, here's a list. You can screenshot it. Go make something fun.
I love the Hisuian Basque Legion in the list. Good. I've played that card in GLC, in like the Water Deck GLC, and I love the Basque Legion. I think it's a cool card. And so seeing it in Dialga, it's an auto inclusion in mine.
Yep. So yeah, that I think what we could say safely is four Charizard EXs taking down the four first tournaments of an entire format.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember a format where, especially post-rotation, where so much changed. I can't remember a format where one deck has been so dominant so quickly.
I can.
ADP?
Arceus Dialga Palkia, yeah. That deck,
yeah, fair
that
deck enough.
Dominated so quickly and was so good. Yeah. As soon as Zacian came out, it was, or Sword and Wild. Shield base set, it was insane. I will say that in Perth, the Lost Zone box that got top eight played a Hoopa EX. The fighting type Terra Hoopa EX. So there's hope for you Hoopa fans in there that wanted Hoopa to be good. There's a little bit of faith in that one. But yeah, I think Charizard has emerged, and I think the results, especially of Orlando, showcase that it's definitely the most popular deck in there, and especially with towards list kind of showcasing of just how strong it can be and almost like validifying people's thoughts.
Yeah.
It's really, really interesting to see this Charizard deck take form and really just, in my opinion, just be so strong at events. One of the things that I do want to mention, though, and something that I've heard someone say on Twitter and I think is really, really good, Orlando ended up being the biggest regional of all time. Take a sip of your coffee or whatever you're having for every time on this podcast that we've said biggest regional of all time in the last 3 years. 2,369 players.
Oof,
Sean,
so many.
Insane. We saw that 22%, I think you mentioned, on day one of this tournament was Charizard, right? But I saw a lot of people talk about in their matchups, oh, I didn't hit Charizard all day, or I just, I dodged this certain matchup. I was looking for the Lugias, and I never saw any of the Lugias. And I saw someone say that events are so big nowadays. For the average player, for you and I, Sean,
yep,
it is probably way, way, way better to just play what deck you're most comfortable with, rather than saying, okay, there's 22% of Charizard in the room, what do I play to beat Charizard, right? Instead of making like a last second switch, just go in with the deck that you're most comfortable with to be able to do. And I honestly find a little bit of truth to that in like playing a lot of other card games, right? You know, I play not the best deck in most all card games, right? I'm talking about playing Dialga Matang. Like, obviously, I don't play the best deck. So, like, I think there's a lot of truth in that. Yeah, we talk about these lists, and they're great lists, and if you want to play them, you should play them. But if you're playing events and stuff like that, you should just pick whatever you're most comfortable with and whatever you have the most fun with it. I think that's something, especially for newer players, that they should realize and just practice.
Yeah, I think your point about how big the event has gotten, I just did some quick math on my phone. I did not do this in my head. 22%, it is a big number. Don't get me wrong. It's a high percentage. But total numbers, that's 521 Charizards, which means there are 1,830 some odd not Charizards. So. Yeah. Again, like, you know, hey, maybe you'll have a little bit of bad luck and hit a bunch of Charizards. Maybe you won't hit any. But like that number, you know, I know that percentages do matter in terms of probability to hit a Charizard. Mm-hmm. But the Charizards, if they're doing well, they also have a probability of hitting each other too, right?
Yeah.
And if more of them get paired against each other, it becomes a weird dynamic where you'll have like half of a field, kind of like the people who either have better luck or pilot it better, become the Charizards at the top, and then the others, because of those losses, kind of fall down out of the middle pack. So
it's almost like, you know, there's so many players, there's too much variance in the fact that you can either hit all of them or hit none of them or any specific matchup overall. So it's just best to have the deck that you're best at and just continuously grind, because you know it the most, right? So yeah, I'll step off my soapbox for that. But Charizard is a good play, and there's a lot of cool decks in this format. I thoroughly enjoyed watching this weekend's regionals, and I'm excited to see where the format goes next. What's the next event? Sao Paulo? This upcoming weekend? Yeah.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, and then Indianapolis in a couple weeks. Unfortunately, I won't be there, but it'll be cool to watch.
Awesome. Sign us off, Jake.
Thank you so much for listening to the Metapod Podcast, the Pokemon podcast that revolves around the evolving meta. I'm Jake. That's Sean. Have a great rest of the day.